Welcome to this week's episode of Gaston's Great. Finally, the number one episode out of all of season three with 267 downloads is episode 53, Senior TLC, or Total Life Care. They are a nonprofit Medicare program and Medicaid state option, which provides care for people age 55 years and older who need skilled nursing care. Their day center is open 5 days a week with transportation services and provides a fun and friendly place with medical and rehab and support services. Their members can take pleasure in meals with friends and enjoy social activities. Listen now to our number one episode of season three. Hello, Gaston County. Welcome to episode number 53 of Gaston's Great, a podcast highlighting some of the great things happening in and around Gaston County. I'm your host, Stephen Long, and we are coming to you from the worldwide headquarters of GSM Services. As we look forward to having some great discussions in the coming weeks and months, we simply believe in discussing more of the reasons why Gaston's great. We are highlighting another great organization as we highlight Senior Total Life Care, or Senior TLC, which is a community PACE program. I'm sure we'll hear more about that. And with us today is Dr. Alan Clark and Kathy Kinzig. Dr. Clark is the medical director for the organization, and Kathy is the executive director. So Dr. Clark and Kathy, it's great to have you on, and welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks for having us.
Well, you're very welcome. So we're going to get right to it, and Kathy, maybe start with you. If you could just tell us a little bit about yourself, anything you'd like to share.
Sure. Thanks. I appreciate the opportunity. So I've lived in Gaston County since 1986, a long time. Brought up two kids and now have four grandchildren. I've worked in pretty much nonprofit most of the time that I've lived here. Worked with some at-risk kids, and then have moved into working with seniors. Excited about that opportunity to essentially to take care of folks. I think that's where my passion has been for a very, very long time. Dr. Clark and I have worked together since Senior TLC has opened, and we actually both came here from the same part of the country at just about the same time.
Okay. Dr. Clark, how about you, sir?
Well, I was originally born in Cleveland, Ohio, but I've been in North Carolina for quite some time. Through my training, went to a lot of different schools, Washington University in St. Louis, Duke University, okay. Wake Forest University, and did residency training at Case Western Reserve back in Cleveland. So I sort of been around, but ended up back in North Carolina in 1991 after I finished my residency because I owed the state of North Carolina a whole bunch of money, and they were looking for docs to come and work in physician shortage areas in Gaston County.
Okay,
was one of them, and so with Caremont and internal medicine practice, I ended up here. Thought I'd be here for about 3 years and pay my loans back and move on, but I'm still here 32 years later. So it's been good. So practiced general internal medicine for 12 years, hospitalist medicine for about 10 years. And now the past 8 or 9 years at Senior TLC.
Okay.
So it's been a great growth that I've seen in Gaston County in the medical care from when I came in 91 to now. It's just incredible growth.
Well, very
thanks
good.
Thanks to many, many reasons.
Absolutely. So are you a Browns fan, I have to ask?
I am a Browns fan. It's been rough. I've been an Indians fan. It's been rough.
Yeah.
Well, I was a Guardians fan now, actually. Yeah. But, I'm still – my allegiance – way back is still with the old Cleveland.
Well, you know, as an NC State guy, I feel your pain on athletic. What's the word? Deficiency or whatever. You gotta build character being an NC State and a Browns and Cleveland sports fan. At least the Cavs.
Well, when I came to North Carolina, I went. Duke was the first place I went, so that helped out a lot.
Well, we won't hold that. We won't hold that against you. So. I'll go back to you, Kathy. This is kind of multiple questions here. So, and what can you share? Kind of, you mentioned you've been involved from the beginning. Kind of the history, the mission, and maybe how you got involved with it, with Senior TLC, and then just get some history for our listeners who might not know much about it.
Absolutely. The mission of Senior TLC is to encourage and support the quality of life and the quality of end of life for seniors who wish to continue to remain in the community. We're an alternative to nursing home care.
Okay.
PACE stands for Program of All-Inclusive Care for the Elderly. I got started in the inception. I was the second employee that was hired. I was not executive director at that time. I was doing marketing. But I have worked in Gaston County for a long time and was very vested in community opportunities and working with basically populations that didn't have all the resources that they could have.
Okay.
So that was fascinating. Did a lot of faith-based work as well as community work. So they were looking at me to start out in marketing. So I was able to basically we talk about senior TLC and talk about the care that we deliver, we were going to deliver. We opened in 2014. Dr. Clark and I got hired the spring and summer before that. So we would go on the road and we would talk to whoever would listen to us, essentially, about care for frail seniors. And what we discovered is that this is a super unique program. It's an alternative to nursing home care, and we provide primary care, specialty care. We pay for hospital visits, we pay for meds, and we provide PT and OT. And so this wraparound services is what we provide. We're funded transparently by Medicaid and Medicare.
Okay.
We have a good size budget. You know, one of the things that excited me about doing this work was the opportunity to take those funds, bring them into the community, right? So that we were using local providers, whether it was the specialist visits or some of the other care, but to be able to bring that money back into the community. Also, to be able to hire folks, hire good folks and train them. And we'll probably talk a little bit more about that. But that's a little bit about what Senior TLC does.
Okay.
When we first started talking about the program to the community, I remember back, it's like people said, that's too good to be true. That's not going to work. You're going to go bankrupt. It's not going to work. You can't do that.
Yeah.
And it's like, and I was like, well, I better rethink this job. I don't know if everybody says that. But, 10 years into it now, and it was a model that was out there.
Okay.
And actually, when I started, I got involved in the Senior TLC. I had been working as a hospitalist and director of the hospitalist program at Caremont for some time. And I left that program, and Robert Spencer, the CEO of Contegra,
yeah,
called me up and said, hey, you looking for a job, Clark? And I said, I guess so. And he said, well, we got this PACE program going. And I'd been on the board at Gaston Family Health Services, and I remember they were starting the program. And I sort of heard about it. And we're going to take care of all these folks that belong in a nursing home, in a daycare center, and then send them home at night and pick them back up again. And I just said, that would be a horrible job. Nobody would want to do that. And, 10 years later, 12 years later, it's actually been the most rewarding job and maybe one of the hardest jobs I've ever done. I've been doing general internal medicine, hospital medicine, and now PACE medicine. I mean, there's a lot going on.
Sure.
But it is an amazing way to take care of a very, very high-risk population that I've seen here in this county and through the country.
Yeah.
And folks are looking at this model as a way to care, not just for the high-risk elderly folks, but actually – everybody in the country, because everybody's looking for a way to make medicine better in our country.
Yeah, is it, and again, this is a question totally off the question list we gave you, but and I'm totally novice at this information, but is it fair to say we got this big population of baby boomers that are getting to that age, and that 75 to 85 age group, is that getting us to the need where there's more need like this over the last?
Absolutely, there's a need. And actually, Senior TLC takes care of folks. One of the requirements or one of the four requirements is that you have to be over 55.
Okay.
So you think of elderly folks, and like half the people we're admitting now are older than I am. And it's like, what does that say? But yes, our population of 65 and over is exploding right now.
Okay.
We just heard this morning about some nursing homes, talk from the nursing homes that there's no way we could continue to have nursing homes because we can't staff them. We have too many people. There's not money to do it. Well, there's a way to do it. And the PACE program, it's not for everybody. It is not for everybody, but right, it really serves to keep people in the community. That's our goal. So, yeah, it's a huge need of our society over the next 20 years, probably the greatest medical thing that we have to really address.
And Steve, if I can add, if you think back to the 80s, what the community looked like and what type of businesses were here, right? I think your family started GSM, but also it was very textile-oriented, manufacturing.
Yep.
And so when I first got involved in community work, Gaston 2012, if you peel back the layers, what you learn is that, and I'm really talking about the people that we serve, is that years ago, the mills and manufacturing facilities would hire kids out of high school, but they weren't graduating. Right? Mm-hmm. They didn't graduate. They didn't make it that far. I don't know how young they were, but I'm going to bet they were 14 or 15. Their grandparents worked there. Their great-parents, grandparents worked there. Why would they do anything different, right? And add to that, in those communities, you had they had built infrastructure around it. There were doctors and there were grocery stores around the mills. Well, what happens is you have this population that we're serving now, and they didn't graduate from high school. They worked really, really hard, really hard. And they're like pillars of our community. But they also, they don't have the education level to navigate this extraordinarily complex health system.
Sure.
Understand the meds. You know, when we see them, they come into our program, and Dr. Clark can talk about how many medications the seniors are on,
yeah.
20 or 30, and you wonder, how do they even take those every single day? So it is, and as you are well aware, that we're trying to bring young people into the community, right?
We want to do
that. But we got all these older folks here, including Dr. Clark and I, that need to be taken care of. So no offense, I'm not going to throw you under the bus, but seriously, I mean,
well, even I'm old enough to I have recently began getting the AARP mailers.
Yes. Graduated.
So I don't need any comments from over here, but yeah. I mean, that's the one thing that time carries on, and hopefully I have the opportunity to age, you know, so maybe not as gracefully as I would like, but that's great. And to your point about, you know, the textiles, you know, our company actually started basically doing tin roofing for mill houses. Mm-hmm. And that was, they were everywhere, yep. Right? And that was such a huge thing, or at least what we call mill houses. So I appreciate you sharing that. Can we kind of just maybe share, this is questions for both of you, but can you kind of talk about what are some of the specific initiatives, or what is the day in the life? Sorry, Elizabeth, I just smacked my microphone. What's a day in the life like for somebody who's under the care of your program or team members? Just, you know, just kind of get into, so our listeners kind of know more specifics of what you guys are doing on a day-to-day basis.
Steve, let me just sort of back up a little bit, because
sure.
it's a very unique program, and we try to, you know, how do people understand really what it is? They keep on looking, and we have to explain it five times. There's four criteria. I think that's important to know. There's four criteria for anybody to enter a PACE program. And PACE is a national organization.
Okay.
There's about 120 PACE organizations throughout the country, 12 of them in North Carolina. And each there is their own entity. But there's four criteria that CMS and Medicare have deemed requirements. One is you're over 55, like I had mentioned before. Number two, you live within the service area of the particular PACE organization. And that service area is actually dictated by CMS, Medicare, so that PACE programs don't compete against each other. So you live within our service area includes all of Gaston County, most all of Cleveland County, and a little bit of Lincoln County, too.
Okay.
So you have to live in the service area, too. Number three, you have to qualify. That person has to qualify to be skilled level of care. And that, in North Carolina, is done by a physician or a medical provider evaluation. It's sent to the state, and the state determines whether that person's needs actually qualifies them to be of skilled level of care, which would actually qualify them to live in a nursing home.
Okay.
And for the state to actually pay for them if they're under Medicaid rules. And the fourth and final, and the one that's a little bit gray, is can this person live safely at home now or with the services of PACE? So those are really the only four criteria. And if you get those people, it's a high-risk population. 98% of our folks are what's called dual eligible, meaning they're both Medicare and Medicaid, which means they're old. That's what you get Medicare for. Medicaid generally means you're of a lower socioeconomic level in there or disabled. So this is a high-risk group. They're low socioeconomic level and a high-risk. And these are the guys that I saw going in and out of the hospital when I was in hospital. So they come in the hospital, we fix them up, we send them home. They couldn't get to their doctor. They couldn't afford the medicines. They couldn't do that. And that's sort of the beauty of the program, is taking these really high-risk people who could be in the nursing home and keeping them. And we can only do that based upon an interdisciplinary team. And that's the key to PACE organization, is a team. We have a team of 11 people with a panel of about 70 participants. And that we sort of, disciplines such as whether it's medical providers, nurses, dietitians, social workers, PT, OT, rec therapy, transportation, CNAs. And that whole group looks at this very complex person. And gives them what they need. It's a needs-based program. That team determines what they need in order to keep that person in the community. community. So that's sort of the basic
okay.
premise of PACE. That it's
and that's
it's
very helpful. Hard to Thank get you. Yeah,
you wrap your head around because it's different than other medical things. But typically a day in the life of a PACE participant, after they enroll in the program, we provide transportation and we pick them up at their home. So a typical PACE participant lives at home. Some live by on their own. Mm-hmm. Some live with family members. It's variable. But we pick them up. We have 13 vehicles now or so, 14.
And that is,
16,
listen, that is something you see a good
see
bit
a lot
around.
On the street
yeah,
in there.
Yeah, absolutely.
We go pick them up at their home. The drivers are amazing people. Because they go to the homes, they know these patients, these participants better than anybody else. Help them in the van, help them out. They come to the center, and we're located in the shopping center near the Gaston Gazette,
right?
Where we're there, and the old Circuit City, which was renovated, and it's absolutely a beautiful place. My son went there; he thought it was a country club for old folks. no, you can't come here. And they come, and they can get a snack in the morning. We provide activities, physical therapy, occupational therapy there at the center. Primary care clinic is there at the hospital. We have two clinics, East Wing Clinic, West Wing Clinic. Activities that go on all day. Prior to the pandemic, we did a lot of road trips, lots of road trips.
Yeah.
We haven't quite started back into that. We're sort of looking at that. But that was a big part to get these people out to Tony's Ice Cream or Crowder's Mountain. Actually, we're going to Rankin Lake on Friday to go fishing. Bring some of the guys.
Yeah, Rankin Lake's a great
yeah,
great
I
spot.
When are we going fishing again? I want to go fishing. So we do a lot of activities. We provide all their medications. We have a pharmacy there in the building. So they only get their medicines from one pharmacy and actually one provider, which is a senior TLC provider. We have four nurse practitioners right now who are the PCPs for the teams, and I'm the medical director over all those nurse practitioners and responsible for really all the medical care of all the folks there. So they spend from anywhere from 8 o'clock in the morning to 3 o'clock, 3:30 in the afternoon at the facility doing activities, being seen in the clinic, doing OT, PT, getting on the bike, stationary bike, extremely important to keep these guys moving. And they have a ball. They really do. And one of the fascinating things that I've seen is these guys would come, they would have been living at home by themselves. Or their parents would go, their daughter would, family would have to go out and work, and they'd be sitting there by themselves, and they'd be depressed.
Yeah.
They come in, it's amazing when you get people together and just looking at one another and being together, their whole outlook on life changes. Their depression scores get better, they just feel better, and, you know, 99% of the folks, they love coming to the center every day. So that's what we do, and then we bring them home at nighttime. So, you know, people get lined up, they get back on the buses, bring them back home. And they're delivered back home by the drivers and, come back.
So how many participants are you dealing with on a daily, weekly basis?
They are called participants because they participate in their care. And notice that, you know, we don't call them patients. They are participants. We have 266.
Okay.
Doesn't seem like a whole lot, but, you know, we're continuing to grow. I wanted to add, too, that in addition to that, if you think about grandparents, right, and if you're taking care of your grandparents and you've got to go to work, we will also send an aide in the morning to help them get bathed and dressed and ready. So if I have to go to work at 5, then an aide can come in at 5 and basically stay there till the driver comes. That's huge. And I say that because of economic development and allowing caregivers to go to work without having to worry about what mom or grandma's doing. And they'll do it on the other side, too, in the evening. The driver will meet the aide at the house, and they'll bring them inside the house to take care as well. So 266, I think over time we have enrolled probably close to 400. These folks are frail, they're elderly, so they're generally with us 3 or 4 years. So in terms of the team experience, you can imagine how difficult that can be.
Oh, sure.
We have a great staff, great team. They work with our participants every day. They are challenged by being able to maintain their care and not fix them. Because when you are, 3 to 5 years to the end of your life, we really are focusing on the quality of your life today and helping you on that end of life journey. We lose, by death, 3 or 4, maybe 5 a month.
Mm.
And so our interdisciplinary teams, we really work hard to support them. We also have, thanks to our sponsors, and I have to give a shout-out to our sponsors because these programs aren't cheap to start.
Sure.
Our sponsors are Lutheran Services Carolinas, Contegra, and Caremont Health. And you asked how we got started. Let me just say another hospital system was looking to create a PACE program here. Contegra leadership got wind of it, got a hold of Caremont, and, you know, long story short, $4 million later, they put the money together to take care, to start the program. So wanted to give a shout out. I lost my train of thought there for a second. Where are we going?
There's so much to talk about.
So,
it's exciting.
So, you ask about initiatives and things that we did. And speaking of end of life would be one of our initiatives. That's really important. Mm-hmm. We have an end of life committee, multidisciplinary one, that we sort of look at how do we take care of folks at the end of life, because that is an important part of the care that we give. People say, well, you're going to refer me to hospice, and Gaston Hospice is one amazing organization we have here in our another amazing organization we have here in our county. And we've partnered with them with several things. We're talking about counseling and things like that. But we really, we know these patients, or these participants very, very well, not just from the medical standpoint, but from the psychosocial and their family. And we really pride ourselves that when folks are at the end of life, we try to keep them in their home, if at all possible. Not always possible. But it takes a lot of work, and it takes a lot of things. So we have an end of life committee that continually takes a look at different protocols and things. How can we do this better? Mm-hmm. Speaking of that, the other part initiative that I'm proud of our clinic folks is that every single one of our participants, when they enroll, the day they enroll, they'll have an advanced directive put together. And we use a MOST form. It's a pink sheet on there. And our primary care providers go through that MOST form with every single participant and caregiver prior to their enrollment. And this is a document that tells what they want to have done at the end of their life, okay, including CPR, ventilators, ICUs, antibiotics, things like that. And it's a tough discussion, but it's important. So we start off by knowing exactly what they want. As we get to know these participants and watch them through their disease and educate them on what their chronic diseases are, sometimes we go over that MOST form again. Every 6 months, actually, we go over that. And it changes. They develop trust in us, and we understand them better. It's probably one of the most important things, I think, that we do for those folks. Especially as a hospitalist, I admitted lots of folks, and they said, well, we never talked about that.
Yeah, my experience with our family, both my father-in-law and my father were under hospice care, and so my wife and I, we've been exposed to that. And one family member, all that was up front done, another it wasn't. So it just made it, difficult at that moment and then the aftermath was just...
Right. It's one of the most important things, I think, that we could accomplish through there. And people are relieved for it. So that's one thing we do.
We try to meet folks where they are, too, understanding that not all families are ready to have those conversations, but so we can hold their hands through that. The other thing I wanted to mention was our work with dementia participants. I started talking about the sponsors. They also have supported us through renovating a good portion of the day center. We call it the garden, and it's for our participants who have memory loss, dementia, Alzheimer's, and it's an amazing space, and it's something that we're seeing more and more of. We recently moved one of our team members into the role of dementia educator, and she's her name's Vernell. If you want dementia education or you just want her to come speak at church, she'll talk about senior TLC, but she really helps families understand that journey and what to expect and what not to expect, because if you have a loved one with dementia, they don't behave, right, like they did, and we have to meet them where they are. We really want to help families understand that journey, too. So I think we're real proud of that as well.
Yeah, my wife and I currently have a family member at Morningside. She is in between with early onset dementia. She's not into the memory care area yet, but probably not too long to be there. So yeah, that journey is it's a tough one.
It is tough. Yep. It is difficult, and you need a lot of different people to help support you.
Yeah,
the doctor's not going to be the only one that do it. Social worker's not going to be the only one that does it. Sometimes it's the CNA. Sometimes it's sometimes it's the driver. Okay,
yeah,
drives back and forth. Hey, this is how to take care of mom. This is what makes her calm. So it's a lot of fun. A couple other initiatives and things that we do there. We have a great quality program that we sort of strive to continue to improve our care of what we do. We look at things we can do better. A couple of projects, quality projects that we did were a fall reduction. falls are a big deal. Mm-hmm. The elderly obviously cause injuries and things like that. So we got an interdisciplinary group together looking at different why people fall, how we can predict if they fall, what else they can do. And in that falls project, we did see a reduction in total number of falls. Most recently, we did another quality project looking at falls that produce injuries like hip fractures or hospitalizations, and look specifically how we can reduce the number of those what we'll call level two falls where a fracture or injury occurs. And actually, we've been quite successful in there. But again, it's using the multidisciplinary team looking at different aspects of the participant's life. So we look at falls with fracture, urinary tract infection reduction, and what we can do for that. So we did a project on there. Mid-air reduction, okay, especially mm-hmm. we do take care of folks in the nursing home. Our goal is to keep people from home, but eventually some of these folks end up that they need to be in the skilled nursing facility. We still take care of them there. They're still our participants.
Okay.
And so we have one of my nurse practitioners and myself. We go to the nursing home. Our teams go to the nursing home and work together with them. But there's a lot of stuff that goes on there. We found that there was a lot of med errors that were occurring in some of the skilled nursing facilities. So we put together a program to reduce that and a standard operating procedure to review those medicines on a regular basis so that our folks would get. So it's things like that we do. One of our big goals, again, when they come in, is try to reduce the number of medications.
Okay? Sure.
They're on a ton of medicines. Most of these folks can come down and probably reduce by half the number of medicines. That was one of the first studies I did when it first came after 6 months. It was about a 50% reduction in number of medications. Oftentimes, we can reduce the number of subspecialist visits because we just work differently. In the clinic, we don't see 30 people a day. We see maybe 7 or 8 people a day. And it takes a lot of we manage their care, and we manage all of their care. And so it takes a lot more time. But we could we find when other folks go out to other docs, they don't have the information. People may be prescribed medications that interact with other medications.
Oh, sure.
And it just keeps on escalating. So I think that's something that we've done and we can do and is an important part of a PACE program, that everything is managed within one center and you have one interdisciplinary team to take care of.
Yeah, we saw that with our family member went to Morningside as she transferred from her current doctor to their
right.
Yeah, there was the communication on the medications, we got it straightened out, but there was some issues there.
Transitions of care are a time of high risk.
Yes.
Whether it's from the hospital or home
right.
or whatever it is, transition of care is huge.
Yeah, we saw that. And we were able to ultimately, get the medications down, actually.
One of the things that we do and that I've encouraged, that I've, we sort of made standard procedure as well, when somebody gets out of the hospital, they are seen that day or the next day in clinic, and their entire med list is re-reviewed.
Okay.
So, or if they go to the emergency room. If a person is seen in the emergency room, they are seen in the clinic the next day or that same day to sort of make sure everything is put together. Other practices outside this type of managed practice like we have, sometimes you wait 2 or 3 weeks. And it's complicated. So it's really
sure
more
it
personalized
is.
Care.
So and family members have no idea.
Right.
I mean, we don't. I mean, I was like, well, I don't know. And we don't know what questions to ask even. So that's why that communication and specific care is in one place, if possible, I would assume is better in most cases.
Yeah, it's sort of localization of care versus spreading
right.
out, getting it.
Right.
I did want to speak a little bit in terms of on the business side of initiatives is something that is exciting. I think we all know how difficult it is hiring right now. I saw your sign out.
For yes.
Me. It's really hard. It's really hard. We have to
compete. It's a unique time.
It's a very unique time. So we, a couple of years ago, and I'm glad that we started it then, we're starting to grow our own leaders. Okay, so we're actively looking at our team members that work for us, and we have been known to create positions based on what we need, but by looking at talents and skills.
Sure.
So they're actually active education. We work with Multiple Choice, Melinda Lowry. She's doing
she's
emerging leader training. We've got, I think, 3 groups going on. So it's really an investment on the business side in growing your leaders so that we have an opportunity to tease out, is this something you want to do? Melinda always says, and I believe it, we have a responsibility to train and support our team members. And if they leave and they're better, then that's wonderful. But that is our investment in the community as well. But it has really paid off. We've had drivers come in that are now in a medical records role or receptionist role, CNAs too. We've got a couple of CNAs. One is our customer service, the medication assistant. So they've just grown based on their desire to do more. So I think we have to do that in healthcare, probably everywhere.
Yeah.
But I think that's one of the things that we're proud of. We're proud of looking at how well the participants do, but also just how the team is growing as well.
All right, very good. Yeah, we see the same thing. We've been doing that for many years, but yeah, or something similar. But we've really seen the need for that increase, and this put a positive spin on it. This unique time that we are currently dealing with. I'm sure you guys have many stories, but you know, maybe is there something you could share about one that maybe stands out of the impact you've made on a family, an individual, or something that you just like, wow, you know, this is really why we're here. This is something that was impactful that you can share. I mean, obviously without sharing any specifics of.
Well, I have one to share. And I started intake. My first role with Senior TLC was in doing intake, marketing and intake.
Okay.
At that time. So that means going into someone's home and listening and talking to them and seeing if they're interested in Senior TLC. So I visited with a participant that doesn't live far from the center. She's one of the first ones that I enrolled and sat in her bedroom with her, and she was kind of bedbound at that point and listening to her goals. And she really didn't leave that room. She really didn't. She had a wheelchair. She really didn't leave that room much. Well, she enrolled, and over time, we've seen her walk. We've seen her come out of the bed into the wheelchair. We've seen her walk with a walker. We've seen her advocate for us. We've seen her in the hospital this close to not making it. She's got many a life. And she lifts us up on a regular basis. She helps us to celebrate holidays. But her health has ebbed and flowed over time. And she's just not done teaching us.
Oh, wow.
What I have said. I think you know who I'm talking about.
Barbara leads us in our Thanksgiving pageants, our Easter pageants, Christmas. Yep. She is the director, and she just, like, lights up. And she's got this whole group in the day center, and everybody's like, oh, well, Barbara's here. We better get going. And she directs them. They got feathers in their hats, and they have Easter bunny ears on, and she just gets everybody rolling. But, yeah, she's an amazing lady. Yeah, she's been a couple near-death experiences, and it's wonderful. That's really great for us.
Sure.
She's a remarkable lady. I think one gentleman, Richard, and he had a horrible back injury from an accident just prior to joining, and he was on hemodialysis, chronically ill, but very smart guy. He was a manager. Yeah. He was a manager to a local managed a big company in the past. But anyways, he had a back fracture, and he was basically paralyzed in a wheelchair for quite some time. And his goal was to walk again. I said, well, you know, you can't, your back's broken, you can't walk. Well, after about 2 years, we actually have video on him. He was walking. He had braces on. He had a walker. But he was walking down the hall with the biggest smile on his face.
Oh, that's terrific.
You know,
yeah.
He struggled. He had his struggles. But our therapy department, you know, held a really special spot, and they got him back on his feet. There's another lady, Margaret, who was one of our. She was with us for a long, long time, probably 7 or 8 years, and she had fairly moderate dementia. Lovely lady, loved to do little word puzzles, but never knew what she was really doing out of word puzzles. But she was happy. She enjoyed coming to the center. She lived with her daughter, who worked full time, and continued. And her daughter's goal was to continue for her to work full time. But she was 24-hour care, and it was just her and her daughter. That was the two. So Margaret came to the center every day. Her daughter picked her up every day. Actually, she wanted to pick her up.
Wow.
But she was able to live at home for those 7 years when she needed 24-hour care with our help and help from our home aides and help from her daughter, sort of a joint project, until she got ill one day. And she ended up having a diagnosis of cancer and was in the hospital some abdominal issues. The last month of her life, she did need to go to the nursing home because she was too ill. But she spent 7 years at home with her daughter, which was extremely important to both of them, and had a much better quality of life than if she were just to end up in the nursing home and then her daughter would go visit her every day. So, she was a delightful lady. And the one other guy that I think of, Casey, he he was probably the most depressed guy I've ever seen in my entire life. He was a thin little guy, lived out on a way out in the country in Gaston County, and he came in, he was, had the saddest face in the world. And I said, because, you know, you need to take some medicine. I'm not taking any medicine. I'm not taking no medicine. They're all horrible. They're all bad. They're bad. And he was just miserable. He wouldn't eat. He would hardly talk to anybody. We came to the center, started to come to the center, actually developed a relationship with one of our nurse practitioners and the team members, and he ended up agreeing to take some medications for his depression. And after about a year, I heard somebody playing the piano in the center, and it was him. He was out there, and he had his big cowboy hat on, and he was playing music on that piano,
oh, wow.
And he was laughing and cracking up, and all the people and all the other participants in the center were in there singing and having, I mean, it was like, this is the guy that came in and couldn't look me in the face because he was so depressed. But yet, through that socialization, it wasn't just medicine. It was being with other people. And to see that transformation over, you know, about a year's period of time was really quite remarkable. So that's just a couple things that I thought.
Well, those are good. I mean, I'm sure you've got...
There's
many more. So how would you say, like looking ahead, you know, 5 to 10 years, I mean, what would you envision the program looking like? Or are you at capacity? Or, you know, again, is there anything, any big vision that you guys have?
Kathy has great vision.
there is great. We were recently
visionary.
Awarded, thank you, Dr. Clark, a service area expansion. We have Cleveland County as our service area. But we've been awarded Rutherford County as well.
Yeah.
So we are in the process of breaking ground on a new day center out in Shelby.
Oh, wow.
That will be able to serve up to about 200 folks there. We're not at capacity now.
Okay.
We could add, you know, shudder to think, but another 100, 150 folks that we could serve. It's a home and community-based model, so we can do care in the center and in the home, so we can do that. We are one of 11 PACE programs across the state, and PACE across the state, similar programs. The goal for basically the state Medicaid department is to grow PACE across North Carolina so that every citizen in the state has an opportunity. So it's exciting to be part of that. But I think what we want to do is continue to provide the dementia education to the community and be that resource for folks when they need us. So that's some of our big picture, but we're not at capacity.
Okay.
Yeah, the pandemic took a bit of a hit during the pandemic, but all the PACE programs and all our world did, right?
Yeah.
But we've bounced back now. I think we're in a much better place right now. Our enrollment is growing, we could probably easily double the number of participants we serve in our service area with the service expansion. What's going on? I mean, it's a great opportunity for Gaston County. It really is. Looking, these are the highest risk folks. These are the highest, most fragile people that are out there and use our resources. And to have Gaston County and Cleveland County also to have this resource within our community, I feel really good about that. It's something that not everybody has. Only less than half of North Carolina has this type of service or this type of program available to them at this time. The state, in their wisdom, has seen that it's worked, and we're moving forward to getting more folks. When we first started, the state was very afraid of PACE. They thought it would just cost too much money, and actually they put caps on the number of people. And we were worried that, oh, gosh, we can't have enough people. But the state legislature has been educated and learned about the benefits of PACE that actually, from the financial aspect, we actually save the state money versus having them putting people, them paying for nursing homes. If they go to the nursing home, actually PACE pays for it. And so there's been a lot of education, and we're very thankful for that, the support from the state legislature we have right now. They've been very supportive. There's a great group of people there who really do understand how we take care of folks and why we do it.
So this, you know, this is, you probably already answered this question, but I'm going to ask it. In essence, you've answered it, but I'm going to ask it anyways. And this is a podcast about why Gaston County is such a great place. I mean, why would you say, you know, Gaston County is better? Because, you know, senior TLC is here.
There's so many reasons.
Right.
But, let me just talk about the hospital, Caremont, for a second. Caremont's an amazing hospital. And I think the community is better because of our relationship with Caremont. Not only did they financially support us in the beginning, but also we helped to reduce readmission rates, right? And that partnership and being able to to share patients, if you would. I think it's the care that we, obviously the care that we deliver to a frail population, but then the opportunity, even if you're not a PACE or senior TLC participant, you know, we can help families with resources. We can help share information. We can refer them to hospice. We can refer them to the adult daycare in town. We're really good community partners, you know. In terms of resources, you know, the SNFs that we're using locally, as well as the specialists, you know, all that, all those resources are going right back into the community.
Right.
Those are things that would not have happened had we not existed. That amount of revenue, if you would, coming in.
Very good.
Plus workforce development. We have 116 employees.
Okay.
So we are, you know, super
That's
excited.
Significant, yeah.
It is. I think it is.
Absolutely, it is.
Growing over the years, and when we add the new day center, our hub will still be Gaston County.
You know, right.
This is our home. We may have satellite centers, but our administrative hub is right here in the community. And we have people coming from Charlotte to work with us.
Oh, good.
Well, they come this way. It's a little easier commute than going the other way.
I like this side of the river.
Absolutely.
Dr. Clark, anything you would add to that?
Just like I said before, the growth of the medical community since I came in 1991 has been incredible, and it's due to many great leaders that we had put in here. A lot of great, you know, folks that came to town who had vision from Caremont, from Contegra, and Lutheran Services has now joined us in that as well. And so it's really been an amazing journey over the past 30 years to watch this happen here in this community. When I first interviewed for a job in 1991, the road to Charlotte still had grass growing over it, and it was like, you're going to Gastonia? My wife is from Hickory, North Carolina. She says, we're going to Gastonia. And well, I raised my two kids here. They went to school here. They're still in this area right now. And really blessed to end up here and to have the support of this community. It's been a great experience.
Well, we snip that and. That's the reason why we're doing this podcast, because you just described it. I mean, that because sometimes, you know, we're in the middle of it. We just, it's great, but you know, it's almost like I think Gaston County, one of the best kept in Gaston County, one of the best kept secrets in North Carolina.
I agree.
So is there anything else I haven't asked? I mean, we'll finish up, you know, before we're done, we'll make sure our listeners know how to get in touch with you, you know, and look more information up. But anything I haven't asked, anything else you'd like to share before we move on to some of these really important questions?
I think we made a pretty good summary.
Yeah, I mean, this has been really good.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah. You know, like, we
appreciate the
opportunity. We have website. We have telephone numbers.
Yeah.
You know, hopefully if people listening to this have people they know that may benefit from a service like this, they're not sure, that's fine. Just call us, because that's what we do. Is we find out whether this is the right fit for you or your loved one or your neighbor or whoever it is. So.
And on the educational support side, church groups, you know, anyone interested, you know, we do go to a lot of churches, and within every church, there's generally a lot of generations there, and you never know if someone's neighbor is struggling or someone's family member is struggling, and they struggle alone. So, you know, we would love to come out and just visit and chat and share and educate. That's just part of our mission as well.
Well, good. Well, that's kind of the whole point of this particular episode specifically is to. And then there may be somebody, if it's just one person hears this that has a family member, a friend, or somebody that's not aware of the that program, that could help not just the individual, but, you know, I'm sure, gosh, the quality of life of the family, you know, could be positively affected as well. So, yeah, again, we'll be sure to come back before we finish and make sure our listeners know the specifics of the website and where to get information and how to get in touch with you guys. But this is a podcast about Gaston County, so we're going to do what we call it today, our speed round of questions. I'm not sure why we call it that. We don't go any faster, but we're going to call it that anyway. And this is really what your family members, your friends, the other team members at Senior TLC want to know about you guys. So, Kathy, I'll start with you. Kind of what is your favorite activity or thing to do in Gaston County when you're not at Senior TLC?
I love gardening and hiking. Okay. I live in the Gaston County part of Kings Mountain, real close to Crowder's Mountain, so I love hiking and hanging out with my
Crowder's
dog
is terrific.
And gardening and that kind of good stuff. Yeah, it's my favorite.
Okay, so. Very good. Dr. Clark, what about you?
We're pretty similar on that. Hiking Crowder's Mountain is probably my very favorite thing to do, and I was amazed when I talked to people who live in Gaston County, and they said, I've never been there.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
that
is
crazy, because it is just incredible.
And it's so unique when you you have to go a lot further to get to the other mountains or real mountains, and people coming, you know, because I get so used to driving by there and I don't even think about it anymore. But, you know, people who aren't from around here, they're driving by like, what is that? You know, that's kind of, it's just a unique thing for where it's located.
My best, one of my favorite activities is backpacking every year. And I go on a back, the past 32 years, I go on a week long backpacking trip out west. And Crowder's Mountain is the perfect training ground to do that. So my buddy and I, we loaded up at 4 o'clock in the afternoon all summer long and go up and down the stairs up there. And it's, you know, so not only is it a great workout, but just a beautiful place. And you meet great people out there too.
It is a legit workout if you do it enough. Dr. Clark, stay with you. Maybe favorite dessert shop, bakery, or, you know, restaurant, or anything you'd like to share here in Gaston County?
Bakery and dessert, you're asking the wrong person, because I got to stay away from those sweets. So I try to do that. I meet my buddies at Crackle Barrel about once a month. My old friends, a couple of my old doc friends, just friends that hadn't been there. We meet there at 7 o'clock in the morning. And I know it's a chain restaurant, this and that, but it's still folks from Gaston County that
that's great.
There.
Absolutely.
It's a fun place.
Well, you know, any place where you can get breakfast all day.
That's right.
I'm all for it. Kathy, what about you?
So if I'm going to splurge on a dessert, I think it's definitely going to go to Tony's. Okay. I think it's Tony's.
Oh, I did write Tony's.
Tony's
is awesome.
And, you know, probably the last place I ate was Waffle House. pecan waffle.
Was that in the middle of the night?
No, it was not. It was not after hours either. It was in the morning. I'm a big fan. But also Webb Kitchen. You know, you have to give a great shout out to Webb.
Webb is terrific.
You can't go wrong with Webb. Their steaks are great.
What about you, Dr. Carr? Last place you ate here, was it Cracker Barrel?
Probably was.
Okay.
In there. The Pita Round. Downtown is a fun place too. Yeah. Like I said, the development of downtown is great. Yeah. You have a place like that, you could eat outside and hang out and listen to music. At times.
Yeah, I will admit, Peterbilt is just so close. It's I could practically walk there. But yeah, it's good. Kathy, what about you? Are you more of a North Carolina mountain person or beach person or both?
I think both, but if given the choice, I'd probably run to the beach.
Okay.
Run to the beach.
Yeah, again, that's something unique about Gaston County. We're so, you know, relative to other parts of the country, we're so close to both, especially in the summer. You know, I don't mind getting up there. It's a little cooler, even though, you know, I'm all about hot weather with what we do here. But Dr. Clark, what about you?
I love Topsail Beach. I just got back from there. We go there once a year with the family, but Blue Ridge Parkway is an awesome
that's
place.
Great.
Slick Rock Wilderness.
Tell you, one of the best vacations we've ever had as a family, my entire family. All our kids have been with my youngest daughter, I think, was 1 year old. We took a rented a house with my parents and my brother and his family, and down at Topsail, I guess it was North Topsail Island, man. And it would really, I mean, we took the kids fishing. I mean, it was just fantastic. One of those situations where we took a guide with us fishing, and they were ruined because we caught so many fish because we had a guide. And
so
they expected that to be the case going forward. So this is my question that I ask every time because, you know, this is what I do. And Kathy, start with you. UNC Duke or NC State?
Oh, this is a tough one sitting here next to Dr. Clark, knowing that he's a big Duke fan. But I'm going to have to say UNC. Sorry.
It's all right.
When I came to North Carolina, I came to Duke. Mm-hmm. I met Coach K first week I was here, played handball with him, and after that, my father-in-law was like the biggest Duke fan in the entire world, so I couldn't let him down.
Well, I have to admit, I went to his first summer as the coach, went to basketball camp at Duke, and I was at, you know, met him. That was 1980, mm-hmm. Again, being a big NC State guy, I'm a Jim Valvano fan, and, you know, they were hired the same year, and I actually, when I was a student at NC State, I met Coach Valvano multiple times, so. But
they were a pair, weren't they?
Yes,
they really were. Just amazing people,
and they created a great, you know, friendship, especially after Coach Valvano became sick. Yeah, and y'all, without your microphones, I mean, with your headphones on, when you said UNC, just Elizabeth,
she put in the cheer. Huh?
She gave us a little a clap, applause of sound effect.
My very best friend is UNC Chapel Hill. And he's still my very best friend, and we still argue about it, but UNC is a great school. NC State is my second best friend. Is NC State,
as any listener knows, if you listen to this podcast, everyone knows I'm married to Tar Heel, so we have a mixed marriage, but you know we survive somehow. So Kathy, what is something very few people know about you?
Probably, and you know, being the executive director at Senior TLC, you know, that's a persona that I have. But one of the things that makes me really, really happy is digging holes and planting things.
Oh.
And I know that sounds absolutely nuts, but I love in the spring and the fall. Nothing makes me happier than to dig holes and plant things. And I'm known for putting things in just to see what happens, and then I forget what I put in, and then I have to figure it out.
Yeah.
And battling the deer in the yard. I have an acre of land, and Dr. Clark shared with me his pie tin strategy for keeping deer away.
Yeah.
And that's, I'm on a mission.
Yeah, my wife, we have something growing in our backyard right now that we know we planted in the last few years, and we actually have no idea what it is, so we're waiting to see. And we're battling, where we live, we're battling the chipmunks at the moment from many of the things.
I have an app for you for knowing what plant it is.
I do, too.
Okay.
Yeah, oh, it's great.
All right,
yeah,
well, you can share that after.
What is this? I don't know.
What about you, Dr. Clark? Something very few people know about you.
Some people know about, but one of the things that I really like to do when I'm not working is go out as far out in the wilderness as possible and sleep on the ground, put stuff on my back, and have no cell phone, no electricity for about a week.
Oh, that's
like
good.
I said,
yeah.
We've been doing that for 32 years with a couple buddies of mine, and it's really special to get out there and to be away from the world, because we all need that. We have so many stimuli coming at us every day, and sometimes just to go back and away from the world and reflect upon the simple things in life.
Yeah, these devices are both, you know, wonderful and a curse. The team here at GSM has heard me more than once talk about, I'm not sure the phrase I've used in some of our company meetings about the phone being the devil's folly, just because, you know, it's so wonderful, but then it is just so attached to them. Dr. Clark, maybe how about a book or blog or article you might follow or recommend to our listeners? Or
well, I'm glad you put those questions because I wrote them down. There's two. One,
okay,
to my love of nature and the outdoors, read the book. It's called Desert Solitude. And it's by Edward Abbey. He was he's a naturalist out west, and he spent a year as a park ranger at Arches National Monument before it was a national park in the 1960s. And it's incredible. He just writes beautiful nature things, and it was an amazing book that actually I read just as I was going out there last year.
Okay.
And so that was beautiful. That's Desert Solitude. From the medicine standpoint, Dr. Brown, who's the director of Gas and Hospice, for Christmas, I found a book on my desk, and it's called Life Lessons. It was by David Kessler and Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, and they're an amazing group. I mean, I think many people know Elizabeth Kubler-Ross is writing Death and Dying and the Five Stages of Dying, but they reflect upon their experiences with very ill patients and near-death patients and their reflections upon life. And is absolutely great for us, a way to live.
Gotcha.
And so it was really an amazing book. And I bought several copies and have been giving it out to people, the right people along the way who I feel would benefit from that book.
Well, so very good. I appreciate that.
It's a small book, too. I like small books.
Small books are good.
Short,
yeah.
You know.
Yes. Sometimes I'm an avid reader, and many times I get done with the book and say, you know, that 300 could have been 150 pages to get the same point across. Kathy? What about you? Anything you could share?
Sure. I love historical fiction, and I love mystery novels as well. Kristen Hannah's The Four Winds, which, if you've not read it, it's a long book. It's 800-plus pages. I had a girlfriend say, oh, my gosh, how'd you do that? But it's just about the migration during the Great Depression, if you remember the dust storms.
Oh, yeah.
The multiple years of dust storms, and so the migration of the Okies, right, of folks who migrated to California. And then the suffering and how they were treated when they got there and how they were attempting to displace the workers that were picking, basically, fruit and vegetables and the challenges. It just resonated with me during this challenging time where we look at how we all get along with one another to go back that many years and see what they had to go through. So
sure.
I thought that was really cool. Also on the business side, Quint Studer's Hardwiring Excellence. It is a book. It's a hospital-based leadership book. But he really talks about raising folks up and how to run a hospital or run a program like ours where you're really listening to people. And you listen to folks, you provide them opportunities, you raise them up, and you collectively, you know, share your goals together. So I admire his work. We've done a lot at Senior TLC modeling that. And sharing, you share the work, but you also share the benefit.
Sure.
Yeah,
my experience trying to be a better leader, especially compared to myself 20 years ago to now, is just a path of failure and screw ups. But I've learned that I think listening is absolutely the greatest leadership skill that you can have. And pause before you open my fat mouth, you know, to respond to things. And unfortunately, I've also learned that failure is probably the greatest teacher. And I should be an expert by now.
But that's also, I think, you know, a life skill, too, for all of us. When you talk about the community and the community that we live in, the ability to listen to one another. And I love stories. I love stories. Something that most people also don't know about me is that when someone passes away that's close to me, instead of going to the visitation, I go to the funeral. And because during funerals you hear the stories. And you hear the life stories and things that resonated with them. And you learn something about people that you never expected to. So I think you're right, listening is important.
Very good. So I appreciate you sharing that. So again, kind of a couple more questions and we'll finish up this episode. And, you know, Gaston County is, again, taken to the theme of Gaston's Great. Besides, I'll start with you, Kat, besides, you know, senior total life care, why is Gaston County such a great place?
I think it's the hometown feel that it still has. We're not going to be a Charlotte, right? We're not going to be
Let's hope not.
And that's okay. You know, I think that's okay. I think we need to be who we are. It's the hometown feel. It's the ability to go to Tony's or to go to the Firestone Grill. I mean, those kind of places that have been here for a long time. And then there's new. There's new as well. It's that wonderful blend of the new. And you see the new on the eastern part of the county, and you see the older on the western part of the county. So wherever you fit, you can get in where you fit in, or fit in where you get in. I think that's one of the benefits of the community, that it's just so diverse and, you know, it's a great place.
Thank you. Dr. Clark?
Well, I think just our general location where we are in our state.
Yeah,
again,
it's unique.
Close to the mountains, close to the beaches, but it's a great place to live too. It's an easy place to live. And so that's what I really, really like about it. It's an easy place. You could raise your kids, educate your kids. They could do whatever they want. You know, they could reach whatever goals they have. And we were fortunate. My wife and I were fortunate to have, you know, two wonderful kids and raised here in Gaston County. And you know, they're doing well, and we're blessed to have that. So it's a great place there. But also the continued leadership of the county, Gaston County for a long time, you know, it's changed.
Yeah.
And you know, going from a mill town to where we're really expanding from the financial aspect and business aspect now, there's leaders here that are keep on pushing. And there's a lot of people said, it can't be done. And there's folks here that said, no, it will be done. And we keep on working at it. And, you know, Steve, really, your company and what you do and Board of Commerce and everybody is a remarkable thing. And you need strong people like that with the vision to keep pushing us forward. County, and you know, I feel very fortunate to have lived here and raised my family here, and I've recommended it to many folks.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that greatly, and I agree. My kids are 23, 21, and 16, and I grew up in Gaston County schools and grew up here, so I went to school for a few years, but came back, and you know, and it's been a great. We've had a great experience here with the school system and just living here and raising our kids here, so. I would agree with that. So our last question, and that's probably I think I say this every episode, it's my favorite question. Maybe start with you, Dr. Clark. And kind of knowing what you know now, what advice would you give your 20-year-old self? That's a common response to that question.
Yeah, I had to think about that for a while. A couple things. One, don't be satisfied with mediocrity. Follow your passion once you find it. Don't give up on your passion. And honor and listen to your elders. Mm. That was the best thing I could come up with.
Oh, that's really good. Kathy, how would
that's
you answer
to
that?
It's hard to top, isn't it?
Sorry, maybe I should have asked you first.
No, it's all good. It's all good. I think patience. Be patient with yourself. Be a lifelong learner and be okay with being a lifelong learner. Know when to say, I'm sorry, I messed up. Know when to be proud and not too proud. But also, you know, listen to your kids. You know that if you're going to have kids, you got to listen to your kids, and you got to be a good leader as well. I have also raised two wonderful children that have done great. They don't live here anymore, which makes me sad. But I think that if I had to do all over again, it would be a little bit more patience. I spend a lot of time outside and in this community exploring, but explore even more and share that with my children and those around me.
Yeah, as great as Gastonia is, and it is, I think it's the greatest place anywhere. There's more to the world than Gastonia as well, you know, because I have a 23-year-old who just recently graduated college, and he's probably getting ready to leave Gastonia, most likely, but we'll see what happens there. So I can't thank you enough for your time. So kind of just finish up. Where can listeners go to learn more about Senior TLC, get involved, contact you directly, you know, if they have a family member or somewhere they know that this might just strike a chord with them, this might be something for them?
Sure. They can go to our website at www.seniortlc.org. They can call us. Our contact information is on there as well, 704-874-0600. They can reach out to Dr. Clark or myself, and we'd be more than happy to come visit. I believe we're on Facebook, too, according to my young marketing folks as well. So they're excited, and they share all sorts of fun stuff on Facebook, too.
Yeah, listen, I spent trying to get a little bit of research. I spent some time on the website yesterday, and it's a great site. And, you know, I was able to easily find information about both of you and the, you know, I didn't know anything about a PACE program, and it's a good explanation on there about what that is. And so it is well done. So any last words before we finish this one off?
No, it's just I appreciate you having us here, letting folks know about the program. Like I said, 10 years ago when we started, everybody said that's too good to be true. It's true. I mean, it really does work. It's really hard work. We have an amazing group of employees, an amazing group, every single one of them. It's been the best organization in 32 years of medicine that I've worked with to have the group from all different disciplines and all different levels, and it's been fascinating. So it's really their deal that we've been so successful. They just are passionate, and it's more than a job. It's not a job. It's what they love to do. So we got a great group of people.
And I would encourage folks that if you're, you know, young folks or not so young folks, if they're looking for a different kind of career.
Oh, absolutely.
Get back to the community. Come check us out. Make sure you love change. You know, we're growing and evolving all the time. But I think that, you know, it's a great place to work, and our team members are so passionate about what they do. Come check us out.
Well, thank you for that, because I think I inadvertently skipped that question about how to get involved. Mm-hmm. What advice would you give somebody want to get involved in that? So, guys, this has really been good. I knew a little bit about the program, but this has really been educational, and especially it's great. I mean, it's so Ground 185, you can see the buildings. I'm sure lots of people drive by there and go, what is that? Yeah, you know. So hopefully some of our listeners will hear about this, and maybe you'll hear from them. So, like I do most weeks, have my own book recommendation and kind of finish off with my quote or thought for the week. But I just read a book titled Think Like a Monk by a gentleman named Jay Shetty. Got to be very slow and say that. Jay Shetty. He also has a great podcast, if you're a podcast listener, which I know everybody listening is a podcast listener. So if you want to add one to your subscriptions, it's called On Purpose. But it's a gentleman who spent 3 years as a monk in India. And if you're looking for self-improvement, personal development, how to deal with some of the wackiness in the world today, I would highly recommend it. And my thought for the week comes from Seneca, who I think was a Roman philosopher, if I'm remembering that correctly. I'm sure if not, somebody will correct me very quickly. I think he was Roman. So he said, "Our fears are more numerous than our dangers, and we suffer more in our imagination than in reality." I think that's personally has been my kind of experience, especially the last few years. If you read every headline and listen to the news all the time, I would just encourage you maybe cut some of that off, kind of like what Dr. Clark said earlier, get some time away and disconnect. That might be healthier than some of the other things that we do sometimes. So we're going to close this one out. And to our listeners out there, thanks so much for taking the time to listen to today's episode. Please continue to spread the word if you can about the podcast. And please don't hesitate to contact us here at podcast@gastonsgreat.com. We're always looking for suggestions for future podcast topics and guests. You can find the podcast and subscribe at the website, gastonsgreat.com, or anywhere you listen to podcasts. And please follow us on all our social media platforms, And as usual, Elizabeth reminds me that giving us a good 5-star rating helps us get noticed. Thanks again to Dr. Alan Clark and Kathy Kinzig for being our guests today. Gaston's Great is produced and brought to you by Elizabeth King and Amy Anderson from GSM Services and edited here locally by the Sumner Group. I'm your host, Stephen Long. Thanks again for hanging out with us, and please keep coming back to hear more reasons why Gaston's Great.